Hey, listener. Yeah, you. Talking to you. Are you tired of searching all over the internet for just the right podcast? Well, Moose Media Inc.'s got you covered. If it's the horror and the macabre that sends chills up your spine, then Moose's Monster Mash is the show for you. Or, if you prefer hearing stories from pop culture icons of the past, present, and future, Bull Spit with Moose has your name written all over it. Just give me a follow over on Twitter at the handle Moose Media Inc. And if there's not an episode between those two shows that you like, that Twitter account is backed by a double your money back guarantee. And that, my friends, is no Bull Spit.
Hi, this is Greg Berg, the voice of animated Muppet Baby Fozzie Bear, and you're listening to Moose. And look, here's Fozzie now. Hey, 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 what do you get from a guy with too much time on his hands? Bull Spit with Moose. Waka, waka, waka.
Hey, Paul, look over there at the size of that moose.
Son, that's no moose. That there is a pile of bull spit.
Welcome, Moose Pack, to an all-new and long-overdue episode of Bull Spit with Moose. I'm your host, Moose, and it's Pride Month. And honestly, I couldn't think of a better topic and guest to bring on than to cover the Surge of Power superhero movies and to bring on producer, actor, and creator of said movies, Vincent J. Roth. So let's welcome in and let's get into it. Vincent, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me, Moose.
You're absolutely welcome. And I was looking forward to it. And if I wasn't as big of a procrastinator, we would have gotten it recorded a lot sooner. But
We're right on time. Never late.
Yeah. So how you been? How's life? How's production?
Good. Well, we're delighted to come out to Grand Comic Fest. It was a great convention. Really appreciated the warm reception and the hospitality and the welcoming of the crowds. And since then we've been in post production on our latest movie, Surge of Power, Where There's Smoke, and really excited with. Where we are with this movie. It's heavy on the visual effects side. I don't know if you got a chance to see the sneak peek we showed at Grand Comic Fest. So some viewers got to see some footage for the first time that no one has seen yet. And this is where in the kind of evolution of the Surge character in the Surge of Power movies, where we've lightly introduced some other characters that have been recurring in our films. And now really a team is coming together. So by the end of the Where There's Smoke film, we've got a whole little army of superheroes running around, sort of informally referred to as the champions. And it's kind of exciting to be forming a superhero team and being in the independent world. Obviously, like the big studios have the Marvel with its Avengers and DC with the Justice League, but I'm not aware of any independent studios that have a team of superheroes out. So we're kind of excited to get this movie finished, assuming I survive it.
Well, and on the note of the independent realm, I was thoroughly surprised, and we talked about this while you were here in Grand Island, at the how positive of a response you got from like such a small town coming in as an independent film. And basically an unknown property, and how well people just kind of, glommed onto it. And just, the reception was overwhelming. It was really nice to see.
No, I was pleased. Definitely. I think also one thing that helps, being like you said, it's a small independent, production company, not widely, known property. But we do have, some characters who are played by well-known actors. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps. For example, Nichelle Nichols, who recently passed away, she's the original Uhura from Star Trek, right? Back from William Shatner days, right? She plays a recurring character called Omen in our movies. So she's the help. We played our Doctor Who tribute at Grand Comic Fest and had a lot of Doctor Who actors, some prominent actors, Tom Baker, who's like the quintessential, doctor from the Doctor Who.
Everyone's a doctor.
Everybody's, yeah. So it's folk like that. In our sequel, we had, Linda Blair from, the Exorcist movies. Lou Ferrigno has been in three of our movies. He used to be, he's of course still known as, the Incredible Hulk.
Right.
Having some folk like that, I think helps. So people may not be familiar with the Surge of Power world, but when they see some names and some faces they recognize, I think that lends credibility to the projects. That probably is what triggers the interest. It's from whatever way it comes that, it gets butts in seats and viewers to appreciate our work, is fine with me.
Well, and along those same lines, a little peek behind the curtain. I've been trying to get this interview sorted out for, 2.5 years now, something like that, because you and Surge of Power first came onto my radar from another interview I did, and that was with Shannon Farnan, the original Wonder Woman, the voice of Wonder Woman.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. During the course of the interview, she had many, many great things to say about, the Surge of Power movie and, you in particular and her experience, and just could not stop talking about it. And that's how you and the now franchise has, originally popped onto my radar. So, in the, vein of champions, she is an absolute champion for this film.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. It's funny you mentioned, I remember the first time I met her was at the Hollywood Autograph Show, which is not quite like a comic convention, but like a smaller type of convention where it's really just, stars at autograph tables in an exhibit hall. There's sometimes some other vendors, but it's mostly just like folk there promoting their own wares. They might have their DVDs of the movies or things and autograph photos and stuff, or a book that they've written that they're selling and we'll sign for you. We met Shannon Farnan at one of those events. Got to do a little interview for our web series. So separate from the movies, we have a web series, Surge of Power, Big City Chronicles. And the Big City Chronicles series is sometimes it's little videos of behind the scenes looks at the movies. Sometimes they're little mini adventures of Surge. And oftentimes they're Surge interviewing someone who's played a superhero or has played a prominent sci-fi character. So it's kind of fun to have our superhero interviewing someone who's played a superhero, and that's fun for our audience to just keep providing content to our audience that they, that they can kind of, keep seeing stuff from us without waiting years for each movie, because it takes years to put out a movie. So I met Shannon one of those Hollywood autograph shows up in LA, and brought up the idea to her, and she said, anything is possible. And so we continued the discussion. And what ended up happening was she came on board to play a character called Mavis, who started out as just presented as just an AI program inside the Surge Mobile. She would show up on the dashboard. You'd see her face, like a little monitor. So something better than like Kit from Knight Rider. You remember mm-hmm. the car Kit? And Kit would talk to, Michael Knight. And it was just like this kind of like flashing voice modulator light on the dashboard. And in her case, it's her whole face, head and shoulders, like a bust, her showing up on screen, talking to Surge. So her character got introduced in the sequel, and she's continued on. She has a, small cameo in the Doctor Who tribute. Then she came out more in, Surge of Dawn. I mean, it literally came out because now we started projecting her outside of the car as a hologram, and she would interact with not just Surge, but with other characters. And You know, she's essentially like inside an electronic being inside and operating the Surge Mobile. So the Surge Mobile drives off on its own and has its own little action sequence in the Surge of Dawn movie that precedes Where There's Smoke that we're working on now. And in the current movie, she now gets dialed up and has her own unique costume. She's now running around outside of the car, still, you know, quote unquote, as a hologram. But the actress herself, Shannon, is now like on the ground with us, the other actors running around. And I could see that she was really enjoying that, you know. And when I sent her pictures and I sent her little videos, I'll send you a video we did where you'll see, like, you know, she's controlling the Surge Mobile. It turns into a jet and flies. It turns into a robot. And seeing, and now that she has her new outfit, when we did that costume fitting, I mean, just the pictures of her just like beaming when she's like smiling, wearing her outfit as Mavis, just like was so heartwarming to me. I'm like, she's really liking her character. And now she's more than just a voice or a face on the dashboard. She's, you know, literally running around on set, you know, with other actors and part of a superhero team. When she first started showing up, we would have her dressed in red and blue with this little gold eagle necklace to kind of have a wink and nod to her former life as Wonder Woman, right? From the Supergirls, because she played that character for 10 years. You know, to date, she's still the longest running Wonder Woman out there. But now Mavis has her own outfit. It's this lovely, like, you know, purple and lavender gown, very regal looking. With an embroidered gold eagle on the chest. We kept at least like a little wink and nod to her life as Wonder Woman. But now she has, you know, her own unique costume and still a little hint of her legacy as Wonder Woman. But, you know, she's been now, this will be her fourth movie showing up as Mavis. And, you know, it's really nice. I felt the same way with Nichelle Nichols. I really liked how she took a shine to her Omen character. And in coming back and performing with us again, it's kind of nice for some of these actors who've had, they had a run previously as a prominent figure, right? Whatever that was, like in Nichelle's case as Uhura from Star Trek. And in Shannon's case, it was Wonder Woman. And now they're like getting new life, you know, and new exposure as a new character, kind of like Patrick Stewart, obviously, like, you know, on a grander scale. Patrick Stewart, yeah. Right, was Captain Picard on, you know, Star Trek, The Next Generation. And then many years later, he started doing the X-Men movies as, you know, Charles Xavier, right? Mm-hmm. So he played Professor X, you know, for many movies. So he went from, you know, the Star Trek world to a superhero character. And I felt that there was like a little bit of that glint in Nichelle's eyes, like, oh, I'm a superhero character now too, you know. And I feel like Shannon is enjoying like a new life too, because you didn't get to see her face when she was Wonder Woman, no. Right? She was a cartoon. You just heard her voice. You know, now people are not only getting to hear her, but they get to see her. And I think she's enjoying, you know, running around as a superhero with us.
Oh, yeah.
In a whole new superhero persona.
Yeah. So let's backtrack it a little bit. Where did the idea of Surge come from?
Well, you know, I've been a comic reader for, you know, since late 70s. And, you know, I think all of us, you know, that are in the genre sort of imagine ourselves. I mean, that's where it started from. Like when I was a kid, watching the Super Friends. Now, that's really kind of what started me even before reading comics, was watching the Super Friends. And probably by the time they got to like the Challenge of the Super Friends, that's really where it like grabbed me. And at some point I started noticing, you know, comics and this is back when like you had that like comic rack in your 7-Elevens and your convenience stores, right? No, they didn't have specialty comic shops back then. It's like, you got your comic books at the rack at
right next,
you
know, to the Playboy.
At 7-Eleven. Yeah. And, you know, so it was a character I had like, you know, thought about, like, if I were a superhero, what would that look like? And, you know, what would my powers be? And, you know, I think a lot of us also imagine ourselves as, you know, the characters that we see, you know, what would I look like if I was Green Lantern, if I was the Flash or whatever. So Surge was a character that I had in my own mind. Over time, it was after doing enough of like what they call nowadays cosplay, right? Back then, they didn't have a word for that. It was just sort of adults dressing up in costumes. Right now they call it cosplay. Now there's this whole like, you know, whole genre, whole field called cosplay. Right back then, before it was even called cosplay, was
we used to just be the weirdos in costume.
Yes, exactly. So outside of Halloween, like, you know, going to a comic convention, I would make other people's characters, of, you know, like a Green Lantern costume, a Flash costume, a Robin. You know, I just, you know, a little dark haired guy. I made a good Robin. So, what kind of led up to the first Super Power film was I was working as a corporate attorney at a company in Orange County called Lantronics, and they had this they released this new product, and they had this marketing campaign that had this little muscular dark haired superhero looking character called Commander X, and the marketing folk like showed me some pictures, and you know, there were times at like company Halloween costumes that like, you know, some of us would dress up and stuff. So she showed me these pictures. She said, "Oh, I think you'd like this. I think you'd find this interesting." So I looked at these pictures of this, you know, Commander X character, and I said, "Oh, you know, no, maybe I'll make a costume of that for Halloween." And she said, "Well, any chance you could make that now?" And this was like February. I'm like, why would I make a Halloween costume in February? And she says, "Well, we have a trade show coming up, and it would be kind of cool to have Commander X there." And so I said, "Okay." The trade show was in April, so I like had 2 months for this. So, okay, well, give me some pictures of this. Let me see what this looks like, you know, and let me think about it. And I was busy at the time. I was busy with work, and I was getting another degree at the time. But this was work. And I'm like, I really want to make this good. I want this to be like my pièce de résistance of costume. So I enlisted a tailor to do some of the harder like sewing stuff. And then I made, you know, fabricated a lot of the stuff myself. And I came up with this costume for this character, Commander X. I don't know if I'll show you a picture. Can you see that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. and then some of the things like lit up too, because some of the things like, I'm just seeing a cartoon image of it. I'm like, wonder, should that light up? Maybe I should put lights there. And, you know, so I came up with this costume, and we did this reveal in the office. I thought I was just going to show her boss, of the VP of marketing. So I come to work one day, and, you know, she's helping me like get into the outfit in my office. And you know, she calls her boss over to come to my office, and I step out, and there's like 30 people from the company all there in the C-suite in administration, like all watching me, and I'm like, they all applauded, and then Commander X comes out of the thing, and her boss goes to my boss and says, "We've got to have him." So they would transfer me out of the legal department into the marketing department to go to trade shows. So they take me to trade shows to portray Commander X and help sell this new product, you know. And it was from that that made me start thinking, like, hey, you know, instead of making costumes of other people's characters, maybe I really should do something with a character of my own. You know, if I can do something to this level that a company would want to like make me their mascot, you know, why not I bring a character of my own to life? And that's kind of what started me down the path. I had some friends in LA at the time that were putting around a short film they did called Succubus, kind of a send up of like B-50s movies, you know, that old,
yeah,
you know, you've seen like the Blob, you know, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, the, you know, Two-Headed Man, you know, that kind of thing. So he was doing this, a colleague of mine was putting this film out around to film festivals. And so it made me start thinking about like, well, what if I, you know, came up with a costume for this character Surge and started off with the idea of doing a short film. And that just kind of grew and grew and grew. So the first trip ended up turning out an 85-minute feature film was our first film. And actually shot on film too. That's another thing that like you just don't do anymore these days. We shot it on 35-millimeter film. So that was really cool. My first movie is actually, still have the film reels that like can go up on a projector and get projected. Yeah. and it's kind of funny. It's like not that long ago. It was only, you know, 20 years ago, but that's kind of funny that it's sort of like it's unheard of nowadays to like shoot things on film.
The progression of technology in the last 20 years is just mind blowing.
Yeah. It's something else. So did that answer your question of like, where did the idea of Surge come from?
Yeah, no, as far as a like off screen origin story, that's a pretty wild one. So now I got to ask, since, you know, the idea to become a superhero started essentially with Super Friends, how surreal was it? You know, I mean, you've worked with Shannon, the voice of Wonder Woman, and then when you came to Nebraska, you got to interact with the animator from Super Friends. Mm-hmm. Like, how surreal is that? That, like, now as an adult, you're interacting with these, you know, icons in the business that helped form Surge.
Yeah, they were my formative years. And it is something else. Like, you know, when I look at Shannon and when I hear her, I don't hear that. But like when I watch I have to kind of listen, because seeing her, kind of hear her differently. But when I just hear her voice, like, you can hear it.
Yeah.
I hear that Wonder Woman kind of, you know, tone in there. And then when I watch Super Friends cartoons, you know, it's so hard to like, but I do envision, I think, like, you know, however many years back, like, what, dude, she shot that in like the 70s. So we're going back like 50 years, right? You know, it is kind of wild to watch the cartoons now. And like you said, Tom Cook, the one who animated them, and looking at that, say, wait, it is surreal to see, like, you know, these are the folk whose hands created these things. And, you know, and Shannon is like near and dear to us, because she's our, like, our own personal Wonder Woman. You know, we kind of like, you know, and especially us feeling like we've contributed to her life as well. Like I said, like, she's got a whole new superhero personality that she could share with her friends. Like, hey, you know, I used to be Wonder Woman, you know, years ago, but hey, I'm Mavis now, you know. And especially, she's a bit older. So at her age in her career, I think it's exciting to like have a whole new identity, you know, to enjoy and to embody, and running around on stage, you know, on set with, you know, other newly introduced younger heroes. You know, she and Michael Gray, you know, is part of our team, part of our champions. You know, he's been playing a recurring character too. You probably know Michael Gray. He was Billy Batson on the Shazam TV show back in the 70s. So around the same time that she was portraying Wonder Woman in the cartoons, he was the live action Billy Batson on the Shazam TV show. And it is pretty wild, you know, to have these folk with me. And also, too, very reassuring to me that they're enjoying their characters and they're coming back, and that they, you know, they enjoy being part of the mythos.
Oh, yeah. Now, there's an interesting facet about Surge that trying to find the best wording for this, that, you know, some people would take for granted, but really is a huge deal, and that he is the first openly gay superhero. How big of a deal was it for you to work that into the story?
Well, I thought if I was going to put, you know, for the time and money that I was putting into the movie, you know, I certainly wanted to contribute something unique. Now, this was around the time when, like, the X-Men movies were just starting. The Daredevil movie with Ben Affleck had come out. So Spider-Man 2, I think, was coming out around that time, or had come out. You know, superhero movies were just starting to kind of get their comeback, right? And starting to become bigger and more widespread, right? And so I felt like I needed to do something unique. So the two things that I did was, one was I wanted, I certainly wanted Surge to be openly gay, because that was not present. Now, there had been gay characters of kind of lesser prominence in the comic books, you know, not main characters, though.
I say,
you know,
but no, not really in the forefront, and this is their story.
Secondary characters, like, I think the first for the first gay superhero was a character called Extrano in the New Guardians, which was kind of an offshoot of a DC project. I think he was introduced in like 1985, and then I think it was 1990 that North Star from Alpha Flight, you know, said the words on page and said, yeah, I'm gay. Neither of those, they were like parts of teams. They were secondary characters. They weren't big teams. Like Alpha Flight is like how many tiers down from, you know, Avengers, Defenders, right, like how many, you know, superhero teams does Marvel have when you get down to Alpha Flight, you know, the Fantastic Four, all these other teams are like much more prominent. Same on the DC side, like, you know, it wasn't in like the Justice League or the Teen Titans, and he was in, you know, the New Guardians. So, these are like kind of lower tier groups and, you know, secondary characters, but not a lead, right? And then also humor was something, because I felt that for mainstream audiences, humor was a good vehicle for mainstream audiences to be comfortable with gay characters. So we saw like the popularity of like the Will and Grace sitcom, right? That sitcom worked and was aimed at mainstream audiences, and its first run ran for 8 years, and then they brought it back like a decade later for a few years. So I felt that humor was a good avenue. Plus, we hadn't really seen humor in the superhero world since the 60s, since the Batman, Adam West TV show. No. In fact, that was kind of like one of our taglines with the first movie, an all new high for low budget camp. So we were trying to like bring back to like, you know, campy fun to the superhero genre, you know. So those were kind of like the two characteristics that I was hoping would differentiate us from, you know, standard mainstream, you know, I guess, you know, we can't compete at the level of like a Spider-Man movie that has like a $200 million budget, right? That was sort of like what I felt was like my contribution to the genre, my contribution to, you know, the entertainment industry, you know, my contribution to society was like, hey, I want to use humor as the vehicle, and I want to have an openly gay character.
Well, and
that became a tagline too. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, and it's always nice to see, as a viewer, see yourself represented. You know, to be able, you know, whether you're black, white, gay, straight, trans, whatever, you know, to look up at some point on screen and say, that's me. I can see myself right there, mm-hmm. You know, and that's awesome. I mean, the end of the day, it's cool as hell.
And I've been to, well, with the first film, I was at almost every screening at a film festival and comic convention. I think there were only two places that I missed on the run at film festivals. And so I could see and hear the audience's reactions. And there were a number of times where people would come up to me afterwards and say, you know, thank you for making that. And make those remarks about representation, that meant something to them. And so I felt good. I felt like I did my job. I accomplished what I wanted to do. You know, I'm entertaining people. People are enjoying it. You know, people are laughing at things that I wanted them to laugh at. I'm entertaining them, and they're also getting exposure and, like you said, representation.
Now, I am curious, in this current climate, have you gotten any pushback on the movie? Like, you know, the closed-minded given any pushback on it?
Well, it's been around, even some, you know, because we've been doing this. I started, it's kind of funny, last month, May, it was May of 2003 was when I started the first script for the first Surge of Power movie, The Stuff of Heroes. So it's been 20 years.
20 years. Congratulations. 20 years
that project's been, you know, in my life.
It's almost old enough to drink.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what will be by the time I get to, you know, where there's smoke, you know, well, actually hope to be finished in a few months, but we'll see. But it was, it's been around since even with the first film. You know, there were times where I could tell that there, you know, homophobia was present with even prejudice, like within the community, but there are folk that wouldn't work on the film. I could tell that some people were uncomfortable with like the content of the film. Now, our films are PG-13, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a curse word. There's no nudity, no curse word. No one's having sex. You know,
super family friendly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Then the most that we did was in the sequel. There was like a brief kiss between Serge and his romantic interest. You know, briefer than the Captain America kiss that Chris Evans had in the first Captain America movie.
Yeah.
With Agent Carter. But there's been prejudice, you know, from the beginning. I remember when like the DVD came out, I remember getting an email from a disgruntled mother, complaining, it's like, no, shame on you. And how could you do this? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and like, almost as if we like it did something like surreptitiously or, you know, clandestinely. And I thought that was interesting. Like, well, you know, we didn't use the word like gay on the DVD, but I mean, it clearly said, you know, fun and campy. And there's several references, you know, comments, you know, out and proud, you know, several comments there that the average person, you know, reading the DVD, you know, cover would get it, that there's a gay character, that there's some gay content in there.
So common sense should kick in and be like, he's not hiding it.
For the sequel, when the sequel was released and on the DVD, I made sure I put out, you know, find out what happens next with cinema's first out gay superhero when legendary heroes and villains clash in, you know, this lighthearted all ages star studded movie. So I made sure I put the words in there. But I've experienced homophobia on set, where I can tell that a lot of like the straight crew members didn't like taking direction from a gay man. You know, I could tell that, you know, some people were not, and some people would flat out tell me that they were not comfortable. I remember a couple of vendors saying they wouldn't work on the movie because of the content. You know, because on our website, you know, it says, you know, cinema's first out gay superhero, and that bothers some people. Like, so people even in the industry, in the entertainment industry, would say like, oh, they wouldn't work on, you know, visual effects or work on editing or what have you. So it happens, and it's there. It's not a lot, but even now, you know, I was talking with a filmmaker colleague of mine. I said, I can still see it and feel it sometimes with some crew members, even working on, you know, where there's smoke, you know, even though the climate has changed quite a bit in two decades, it's still there. But that just tells me that I need to keep on doing what I'm doing, right? Keep telling the story, keep, you know, doing as I'm doing, letting mainstream audiences, like, you know, enjoy the world that we created, enjoy the fun, you know, enjoy the superhero genre, and enjoy our characters.
So it does show that, yes, there's a lot of work to be done and that progress has been made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, you know, that, you know, the gay community isn't some big dark secret, you know, big, well, not secret, some big dark cult trying to brainwash your kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's just open your minds, let people be people, you know, it's so asinine.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, but unfortunately it's there and it's real. So, you know, when we got to the sequel, people wanted to see, yeah, I listen to my fans, you know, I give people what they tell me they want to see. And, you know, folk wanted to see more about, the villain, because that was kind of big too at the time. At that time, several years later, superhero movies were all about the villains. Like, X-Men, like First Class movie, uh-huh, was all like Magneto, right? Everyone was focused on him and his, you know, what turned him evil. You know, Eric Lencher's character as he, you know, develops his Magneto persona. They wanted to see. They were surprised that I didn't explore gay issues in the first movie. And, you know, I really wasn't set out to like have like, you know, a gay character. It was more of like, I'm making a superhero movie that's fun. The characters just happen to be gay. I didn't want to do the stereotypical, oh, this is a coming out story, or this is an AIDS or HIV story, you know? So I thought, okay, well, you're right. I didn't really kind of exploit that facet of Serge's life. So in the sequel, like, okay, you want to see more about the villain and you want to see more about, you want to see a gay issue explored. What we explored was homophobia. So in the sequel, we got introduced to Linda Blair and Gil Gerard, who was Buck Rogers from the 25th century. They play the homophobic parents of my archenemy, the Metal Master, from the first movie. So we explored what the tension in his family was that not only affected him, but affected their family unit, but also his parents' rejection of him or his orientation is what turned him evil. And we see the effects on society, right? That homophobia is not only damaging to the individual, damaging to the family, but then how that affects society. So it's damaging to society as well. So while Serge is doing his fun, campy stuff, we have a more serious story, this undercurrent that's exploring homophobia as we're, you know, sharing the Metal Master's story.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, you know, I love that, you know, you essentially turned that into the villain's backstory, because you're right. It's, you know, it doesn't just affect, homophobia doesn't just affect one person. You know, and it has so many wide-reaching and varying effects. In this case, you know, in the realm of Serge, it creates a villainous mastermind. Mm-hmm. You know, and let's, you know, put that into real world. It creates bullies. 9 times out of 10, it ends in suicide. You know, I mean, it's no joke. And it's odd that you have to put it into a villain's origin story for people to be like, oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
But well, I think it clicks better, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I hope that's what it conveys. You know, I hope I get that message across to people of like, hey, you know, here's not only a you know, homophobia in action, but here's how it, like I said, you know, affects the individual, affects the family unit, affects society overall in the context of a superhero movie, right? And creating a villain, because I think we do see instances where there are consequences, mm-hmm. right? And as you mentioned, like suicide, right? Harm to the individual, you know, but also to the family unit is affected. Like, yep. When you have to come out to Grand Comic Fest, you wanted me to pair up with P-Flag, right? Mm-hmm. P-Flag wouldn't exist if there wasn't struggle with the family unit, right? That's where, you know, parents and friends of lesbian gays came from.
Yep.
Was that parents, you know, and other allies were banding together saying, hey, we need support too. Parents who are struggling with, you know, a child who's LGBT, right? You know, they need support too. And that's where P-Flag came about, is not just to support, you know, the queer youth, but to support the parents too.
Mm-hmm. So what's your process like as you're, like, let's use Up in Smoke. So you're sitting down, where there's smoke, Up in Smoke's Cheech and Chong. How'd you write the Cheech and Chong movie? So when you're sitting down working on the film, Where do you start?
Well, I have a story arc, a rough idea in mind. So, you know, the first Surge of Power movie was, just introducing the Surge character and his enemy and the fictional town of Big City where he operates, and Surge getting his sea legs on. So that was really the first movie. The sequel was then again of exploring the villain and introducing some additional characters. So we get the Mavis character, Serge's best friend, Jordan from the first movie, kind of is being like his guy in the chair, kind of tech support guy. And then on the villain side, so Serge has his mentor in Omen, played by Michelle Nichols. So we gave our villain, the Metal Master, a mentor in this character called Augur, who's played by Eric Roberts. And then further, Augur is on this team of supervillains. And by the end of the movie, we get introduced to a whole team, almost like the board of directors that Augur like reports to, called the Council. So we have this like whole, army of supervillains going on. So it's sort of expanding the Surge of Power world. And then my next effort was, introducing not only additional characters of my creation, but also like linking up with other creators who have independent superhero characters of their own that were pre-existing. So Surge of Dawn was essentially a merging of the Surge of Power world with a creator out of New York, Alex Fernandez. He has this magical vampire Dawn, but he's done these web series and comic books on. So not only expanding my world, but, connecting up with other creators. So this is part of my process is like, hey, I'm trying to build a team of my own characters and showing, okay, so Surge is doing his thing. I want to expand his world by introducing other characters and building up a team. But I'm also trying to connect to other people's universes. So we're creating what I call our indie-verse.
Yeah.
We've seen like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's all connected. You know, all the movies are connected. All the TV series are connected. DC did the same thing on the small screen, right? We had the Arrowverse, right? Started off with Arrow, the Green Arrow character, and then the Flash spun off from that. And then we got Legends of Tomorrow and, Black Lightning and Supergirl, right? And then they all became interconnected. Batwoman, and you have all these TV shows, connected universe. So Dawn was our first foray. The Surge of Dawn was our first foray of linking up. So it's Mavis and Surge and Dawn running around as a little trio in Surge of Dawn. And where there's smoke, this other pre-existing character called The Smoke, who's been a colleague of mine for years, Eric Moran, he's been going by the moniker of The Smoke since his wrestling days. He was a pro wrestler who went by The Smoke. Kind of like Dwayne Johnson goes by The Rock. That's yeah. His moniker, right? So Eric Moran went by The Smoke in his wrestling days. And then some colleagues of his at some point decided to like make him a superhero character in comic books and had a couple of different iterations of himself, but he arrived at this version that he likes. It's this kind of like gun-toting vigilante kind of guy who does have a power. He essentially like turns to gas or smoke essentially, right? The Smoke. So where there's smoke is bringing Eric Moran's Smoke character into our world in addition to my own characters. So again, I'm kind of linking up with other existing universes in kind of building out my indie-verse. So my thought process is, what am I doing in expanding, Surge's life? Of like, what are we exploring along the way? The first movie is more about, him just, again, like getting his sea legs on. It's his origin story. The sequel was, starting to like, give him some support by way of Mavis and his guy in the chair, his friend Jordan, building up the villain side. And now building up a team, like what does that look like for a gay superhero interacting with other straight superheroes and similarly, trying to get them to work together and cooperate. And what does that look like? So these are just, is that answering your question? It's like what my thought process is.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Eric Moran is a big dude.
Yeah. He is. He's like 6'3" and I don't know. He's got to be 300 and something pounds. He is a big guy. Yeah. But he too, though, his character is showing up in live action for the first time in my movie. And I send him visual effects shots so he can see and give his okay on how his character is looking. So I make sure that he's happy too with how the character looks and is interacting with the others. Because after this, I have, one more chapter in mind that will be kind of our Surge endgame, kind of wrap up of the Surge of Power saga. I'll probably bring in another independent character to either join up with Surge or join up with the team. And even on a smaller scale, there's been a couple of things at the end of the sequel. Nichelle's character, Omen, kind of looks up. She's kind of like mirror, mirror on the wall, kind of like opens up these little golden portals in front of her, like, you know, almost like Santa Claus, just like peering at other people. And she's like looking up other superhero characters as possible, you know, helpers here. And I had a few colleagues of mine give their okay to have their characters show up. So for a few seconds, some colleagues of mine have some other characters show up, and I got Nichelle to say the characters' names as other potential folk. And we're doing that again at the end of Where There's Smoke, where Serge is actually going to go and meet up with, very briefly, you know, let them know about the calamity that's unfolding, and Serge too reaching out and enlisting other independent characters. And it's exciting to talk with colleagues of mine who are willing to have their characters show up in live action and meet Serge and have a little cameo in my movie, and maybe potentially be brought back in later in another movie to, you know, be more featured. Again, it's I'm building an indie verse as I go.
Please tell me the next one's There's Fire.
You know, there's fire, what kind of fire?
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
yeah. Okay. That's what you want in the title? Okay.
Did you imagine 20 years ago when you set out on this trek that you would now have this franchise and now be building an indieverse?
I did not think of that at the time. You know, when I did the first movie, it is a discrete story, but certainly, you know, kind of set the stage of, hey, this is someone starting up as a superhero, so that there could be a sequel. It wasn't until I guess I got to this, to actually working on the sequel, that I thought to myself, I said, like, what would this look like? And I thought to my, I didn't have the whole saga, you know, mapped out, but kind of roughly, I thought it might take me four movies to tell the story I wanted to tell. But I hadn't really thought about linking up until probably later in the path of working on the sequel. So it was near the end, and it's actually quite near the end of the sequel where we start showing, you know, a few other characters, like I said, pre-existing characters from colleagues of mine. And the smoke was one of them. So Eric Moran had like a little 8 seconds where his character shows up. Serge doesn't know about him, but it was Nichelle Nichols' character as Omen. She's got these little gold portals, these little magic portals opening up, and she's seeing different heroes and she's naming each one of them. And then we're seeing them. And these are all other people's, other creators, independent superhero characters. So it was towards the end of the sequel that I was really thinking, hey, I should really invite other people in to try and just like build and capitalize on you know, the environments, right? The worlds that we've created, right? Because, you know, I've got my fan base, but they've got their fan base, right? And what if we put them all together into one movie? What would that look like, where several independent superhero characters, each of us directing our fan bases all to one project? What would that look like?
Nice. Now, so you have essentially one film left and your story's told. Are you going to do more Serge related stuff after that? Or is that like Serge is done? And have you given thought to like animation? Because at some point you yourself are going to hang up the suit.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes. So the next chapter, Serge of Dawn is essentially serving as act one of a bigger feature. And Where There's Smoke, even though it'll play as its own movie, Surge of Dawn is runs like, I think, like 46 minutes. Where There's Smoke is going to be like an hour, 5 minutes or so. And there'll be a third chapter. I'm not sure if I'll play it. It'll be done in a way that it can play as its own movie, but it's really intended to wrap around Surge of Dawn and Where There's Smoke for that to be one big three-act feature film. So Surge of Dawn would essentially be act one, Where There's Smoke would be act two, and then this last chapter would be act three. And I'd roll them together as like one big feature film. Then do like we did with the other films is do a limited theatrical release. So I've tried to get it picked up for distribution. But since the first two features were picked up for distribution, I have no reason why the third wouldn't. The Doctor Who tribute movie will kind of sit out there on its own as its own little thing. It's a fun little half hour offshoot. It is connected, though, briefly to the Surge of Power story. I mean, chronologically, it fits right between the sequel and Surge of Dawn. But Surge of Dawn, Where There's Smoke, and the last chapter is called The Final Beginning. This is the title of the third chapter. I will be writing myself out as the actor, so I won't play Surge anymore after The Final Beginning is shot. So that chapter will be my last run. Because I think also, too, if we've seen this in all the other movies, right? Tobey Maguire, Christopher Reeves, Christian Bale, after a certain number of movies, like people kind of, they're kind of done with the character, and it's time to like introduce some like new blood. At the moment, I myself don't plan on making more Surge of Power movies. That doesn't mean that somebody else might not, and I might, offer them the rights, and maybe I might still have a creative hand. But I probably will go into it, as you're suggesting. People keep asking about a comic book, and I just don't have the bandwidth of like doing movies and the web series and a comic on top of that. So comic book realm is a whole nother thing. Animation is a whole nother thing. So that's what I would explore after I write myself out as playing Surge. I mean, I could still do the voice of Surge for animation or so. Or I really would like to do a comic book, maybe at least start off with a mini series and see how that goes. Because by the time I get there, I'm going to have a whole team of superheroes. And I think, the Surge of Power world will be more appealing with a team of heroes as opposed to just Surge. Does that make sense? Like, if you think about like the Captain America movies, right? First Captain America movie, like it was what it was. It had to be his origin story, Steve Rogers, etc. By the time you got to Captain America 2, they were introducing obviously the Winter Soldier. Bucky Barnes was still alive, and right now, big reveal from the comics. And they brought in Black Widow, and they introduced the Falcon. So Captain America 2, the Winter Soldier, was kind of like a trio of Captain America and Black Widow and the Falcon running around. It's kind of like this little superhero team, which was kind of cool. And I thought, wow, what a great concept to have, like, you're kind of like a little mini team within the, Captain America 2 film. And then by the time we got to the third one, Civil War, it was essentially like Avengers 2.5, right? We got all these Avengers characters, in fact, like, two factions of them fighting with each other, really cool, really cool scene that they, came up with. So it makes something more appealing. And so I too hope that not just from a movie standpoint, that there'll be a whole team for people to enjoy. Like, maybe people don't glom on to Surge as much, but maybe they like The Smoke. Maybe they like Falling Apple. Maybe they like Mavis. Maybe they like Kid Dynamo, right? And similarly with a comic book, I think putting out a team comic might be more appealing and have better chances of success if there's multiple characters, right? Rather than just Surge to attract people.
Yeah, no, you definitely cast a wider net that way.
Yeah.
So this has been fun. This is...
Oh, good.
I definitely want to revisit this after Where There's Smoke comes out and talk more.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This is going to be our best Surge of Power movie film. Because it's, like I said, this is where a team is coming together. We have some of our stars back, Shannon Farnan is continuing to play Mavis. Michael Gray is continuing to play his Willie B character. Even though Nichelle Nichols passed away, we've already shot plenty of footage with her, not just for Where There's Smoke, but for the next chapter. We already have the footage we need for her. Robert Picardo comes is it returns. He's the male version of Omen. So he and Nichelle Nichols have been kind of sharing the character. And I hadn't like fully brought Omen out, quote unquote, so to speak, as a trans character. But it's kind of funny that Robert Picardo did this himself. In the scene, so amongst her abilities, she's kind of magical, is like she morphs, and obviously she shows up as Nichelle and shows up as, you know, morphs into Robert Picardo, another Star Trek personality. And he makes a comment when Serge remarks on his appearance, and he actually came up with this line himself. He says, I've been gender fluid since before it was a thing. As the Omen character. So I thought, like, wow, isn't that cool? I've got my own, you know, gender fluid character, you know, going on. So not just Serge as a gay man, but Omen is essentially a trans character.
That's awesome. So,
not in the traditional sense of, you know, of surgery, but from a, you know, magical, you know, being, you know, perspective that can
a literal become, transformation
become what she wants to become for whatever she's needed for, kind of a thing. And you know, we're in a science fiction world, right? So this is an interesting, a slightly different take on what an expression of gender fluidity looks like.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So where can listeners keep up to date with Serge and get DVDs?
So probably the easiest single place to go is our website, surgeofpower.org. So it's .org, not .com. So www.surgeofpower.org. And on there, there's a news page. There's a button for each of our projects. There's a pull down menu too for each project people could look at. There's also a button on each page that says watch our movies. And if you click on there, it takes people to where there's like a few different places where they can stream the movies and different places where they can like buy DVDs and Blu-rays. So probably going to our website. And also, too, there's links to the social media sites. I mean, we're active. I've got social media marketing folk who, you know, keep us active on all the major platforms. So, you know, Facebook and Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. So we have a presence in all the basic, you know, platforms. But probably the simplest place to go to is to the website.
Nice. And listeners, I will put links to all of those in the episode description, and you can find me and other great podcasters over at electronicmediacollective.com, or if you just want to find me, it's Facebook and Twitter at Moose Media Inc. Just look for the Moose. And Vincent, this has been phenomenal.
Wonderful. No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And I, like I said, I look forward to sitting down doing this again in the future. And, you know, it is, you know, an absolute blast spending time with you. God, I can't believe it's only been a month. Not even a month yet.
Yeah.
At Grand Comic Fest, and now sitting down for the interview. And I'm hoping our paths cross again at some point.
I'm around as needed. Absolutely, Moose.
And listeners, there's a lot of good podcasts out there. Unless you're here, it's probably just a load of bullspit.
Ooh-wee, that sure was some bullspit, but I sure had fun.
Junior, you need some help.
Be sure to tune in next time.